Hi guys, welcome back. We have Dr. Vecchione Finneran today. She is returning for a third episode with us. She is going to give us some information on her new book that she has written called The Compassion Conundrum. Welcome, doctor.
Thank you, Jen. Thank you for having me again. It's been a minute, but it's always great to join forces again.
Yeah, of course. If you guys didn't listen to the episodes before, we went over cycle breaking superpowers. That's the name of the last episode. And we went over some generational trauma and how to kind of recognize how we get caught in abuse, kind of observing parents and things like that. And then we also did another episode together, called Love Smart, where we covered some trauma bonding stuff, kind of how to avoid re-engaging in those relationships, which can be difficult. But today we're going to talk about something a little bit different. We're going to talk about burnout for first responders. So I'll give you the floor. You want to kind of just give us some information on this new book you've written and what it's all about.
Sure. So, the book is called The Compassion Conundrum: Strategies for First Responders and Service Providers to Prevent Fatigue. And it deciphers between the differences between stress, burnout, and compassion fatigue. And compassion fatigue is specifically an area that was derailed from the nursing field industry, actually. So it was coined back in the day, but Charles Sigley, who's a psychotherapist, is the one who really started the ball rolling in terms of definition of compassion fatigue and what that is for people that are in a helping profession.
Great. Yeah, I mean, and I think this kind of ties into what we talk about on this podcast, because a lot of people that do kind of struggle with both abusive behavior and, we can also be spouses of, folks that kind of display this abusive behavior are actually first responders. It's a lot of stress. It's a lot of PTSD, and there's kind of this stigma. I know there's definitely in the hospital world, it's getting better. Fire police, where it's like you have all this trauma going on around you and you don't go get help because that's, you're weak if you do that. And there's just such a stigma around it. So I'm happy to see that we're kind of coming into this realm of it not being that way anymore. And I think that this book is a great thing for someone who's kind of like, I wonder if I should talk to somebody, or I wonder if I need treatment for this, to kind of crack open on their own and get their bearings about it. So you also have a private practice, and I know that you kind of specialize in providing services to first responders. If you want to kind of just give us an overview of that.
Sure. I have a group practice called Beck and Associates LLC, and it's been open for about 13 years. I started up as a solo practitioner, and I started in 2023 in August. I hired a registered intern to learn under Beck and Associates business. We have a variety of diagnoses and symptomology that we all treat. My own niche in the practice is working with people who help people, first responders and service providers, which developed for me during COVID. My new hire does something completely different. She facilitates in-person and virtual groups at my practice. And currently she's doing a stress and anxiety management medical model, 10-week module series, which is kind of like a psychoeducational and supportive group for our clientele and communities. As a business owner and a clinician, I always have my pulse on what's going on in my clientele and the community. And what I've found is that people are experiencing very large amounts of paralyzing anxiety and stress. So we need to put these modules in place for clientele to kind of get some psychoeducational tools, and so they can use on a day-to-day basis, so they're overcoming and diffusing and eliminating the stress that's paralyzing them.
That's awesome. I think that's so needed to have like such a specific group, because the stress and anxiety that first responders have is a little different from kind of day to day. Not that that's not important, but I think it just needs to be kind of honed in on and treated in a different way. So this group is particularly for medical professionals.
No, it's for anybody who is suffering from paralyzing anxiety. They don't necessarily have to be in first responders or service providers.
But the book
Compassion Conundrum is specifically for first responders and service providers. And not many people know about the coin termed compassion fatigue, but because I am a service provider, I personally was affected by it during the pandemic as a service provider, and many others that are service providers like yourself and first responders were also experiencing not just stress or burnout, but something much bigger and larger. And it was something that people really couldn't get their finger on and couldn't understand what they were experiencing. And that's called compassion fatigue. So I took some courses on it. I read about it. I researched this term and decided the timing of this book as the aftermath of COVID, which was the book was released in Halloween 2023, was probably a good timing to put this manual out. It's not a book. Yeah. It's more like a manual. And it's really to prevent service providers and first responders from fatigue. They have the highest amounts of alcoholism. They have the highest amount of divorce rate, highest amount of suicide rate. I mean, the numbers just skyrocketed for people in this field. So the goal really is to help alleviate some of these statistical numbers and diffuse them and decrease them, so there is not so much of a high number, quantifiable, you know, research or numbers for these providers.
Yeah, yeah, it got really heavy during COVID for sure. So this mm-hmm. is wonderful. All right, well, let's kind of get into it a little bit. So chapter one kind of covers the definition of stress, burnout, compassion fatigue, which you kind of just went over. Mm-hmm. Can you kind of tell us a little bit more about these things and why they're so important to treat?
Absolutely. I feel as when you're experiencing the symptomology of what you might be experiencing, it's important to know the distinct difference while you're helping in your profession between stress, burnout, and compassion fatigue. So let's kind of break it down. For stress, we've identified there's no clear, real, quantifiable definition or popular definition or examples of stress as a physical and mental and emotional strain or tension. It also is another good definition is a stress is a condition or feeling experienced when a person perceives that the demands exceeds the personal and social resources that an individual is able to mobilize. So we have different parts of stress that are important to recognize. We have e-stress, which is actually a positive stress. It's the kind of stress that kind of gets you going. It's a motivating stress. It kind of gets you moving. You need a little bit of stress to kind of get you started. Yeah. But then we have something that is paralyzing and negative, which is called de-stress. And when people experience de-stress, they have this kind of defense mechanism where they have a fight, flight, or freeze response, which is pretty paralyzing in itself. So that's all discussed in the book in very big detail. So that's the kind of less severe of the three. The next thing that we have is then burnout, which is a state of emotional and physical exhaustion caused by excessive and prolonged stress. So it's like stress on steroids.
Yeah.
Basically, that's what you want to look at it. Basically, people that experience burnout, they're unable to meet high demands. It saps energy, which feelings people are left feeling pretty hopeless, powerless, and cynical and resentful. And it does definitely threatens your job and your relationships and overall feeling like you're just not enough. And there's an empty and a void of emotion and a feeling of beyond caring. So it's definitely a little bit more of a bigger dose because it's prolonged stress. It's more severe than stress burnout is.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. It's
go ahead.
I was just going to say, yeah, I mean, I love the way that you described that. It's like, it's so spot on. I think especially the physical exhaustion part, like it's just, you got to listen to your body. When you need rest, you need rest.
And, you know, most nurses, most people in the first responder community and service community, they don't listen to their body. They just muscle through life and they don't take the time to really hone in and listen to what the cues that their body's telling them. And that's really important to start doing.
Yeah, it definitely is. All righty. So the book also covers something really important, which is psychological and physiological symptoms specific ones. So this goes kind of beyond a definition of what burnout is, which is what we just talked about. It's an explanation and kind of a breakdown of the mind and the body. It actually goes through, you know, while someone is in this state. And I like that you included this because I think it really helps to read this type of thing so that you can recognize the signs, like we just talked about, you know, listening to your body, which, like you said, like some people don't even really know how to do that. And it helps us connect back with our body. So I think, you know, as first responders, we just, like you said, go, go, go. Mm-hmm. We're in fight or flight. So much of the time, it's our default mode. We lose touch with our bodies physically and just run on caffeine and adrenaline, ignore ourselves and our needs.
Absolutely.
You know, and you certainly kind of lose track of your mind and thoughts that are going on in your mind, kind of like you just brought up, you know, not feeling good enough. I mean, that mm-hmm. can just be sitting there and you don't even notice it, but it's weighing on you. You know, I know personally, like, I've felt just super blanked out and so tired, and I knew I was in burnout, but I couldn't even really describe what exactly was wrong. And I think, you know, just like you did with your last book, which covers, you know, domestic abuse and emotional abuse, you give a pretty in-depth explanation and a good supply of terminology, and it helps people be able to kind of verbally describe what they're going through. And I find that to be really important. So how did you kind of compile a list? Because there's so many things. How did you kind of compile this specific list and decide which signs and symptoms to include in this reading?
So I feel like the symptoms of stress supersedes that of burnout, which then supersedes that of compassion fatigue. So compassion fatigue is described as a physical, emotional, and psychological impact of helping others. It's actually the profession itself, often with their experience of stress and trauma included. We see compassion fatigue as secondary and vicarious trauma, which is actually being exposed to other people's traumas with stories and, you know, visualization. So with compassion fatigue, because you're a nurse or a first responder or a law enforcement or a firefighter, you see things that the human eye normally population does not see. And so many people don't even understand that segment of it, because as a nurse and because you're in this field, we have to defend ourselves from, you know, being in a fetal position every night when we come home from work, you know. So the symptoms of stress supersedes that of burnout, which then supersedes that of compassion fatigue. Stress, as I talked about, is a lower level. Mid-range is burnout, and compassion fatigue is a severity. And what I found fascinating, like you said, Jen, it's a professional industry. It's just muscling through the day-to-day, go, go, go to help others, either mentally or physically. But there was for me, as there was for you, something was going on that just did not feel right. It was beyond stress. It was beyond burnout. It was even beyond being overwhelmed. It was utterly a feeling of physical and emotional depletion, a mental exhaustion. For nurses like yourself and other first responders, it's affirmative physical and mental drainage. I had a very hard time keeping my head. I don't know about you, but during the pandemic and thereafter, I had a very hard time keeping my head above water and not drowning, not having that sinking, drowning feeling, but still feeling adhere. And, you know, I had to attend to my clientele with efficient and proficient quality of care with my therapeutic intervention and services. So I had a sense of not having any sort of really real reprieve. And I realized how very easy it is to slip into maladaptive non-coping mechanisms. And found myself doing that. So I then had to regroup and readjust to decide that I cannot just have one form of coping skills and outlets. I need several forms of reprieves and healthy outlets, almost like a toolbox.
Yeah.
That kind of help me, you know, stay afloat and do better than just staying afloat.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it's, you know, it's like, well, first of all, it's like there's almost like this guilt that comes along with it too, right? Because we're supposed to be helping people. That's what we love to do. That's what we're all about. And so when you kind of start to feel this come on, it's it's almost like there's a guilt, like, why am I becoming tired of this? This is what I love to do. And I think it's really great that you're normalizing all of this. Like, yeah, you can still be a great provider, but this is a real thing. This happens to people, and this is how you can deal with it. So let's kind of get into the interventions a little bit. You do have some interventions. So kind of after giving the tools to talk about what, you know, what this feels like and verbalize it, what to do about it, what interventions do you find most effective for yourself and most clients going through this?
Yeah, I feel like when prolonged stress or burnout or compassion fatigue is occurring, the goal is for early detection. The goal is to listen to your body early enough to know that you are on the brinks of something that you're going to have a hard time coming back from. So that's early detection is probably going to be the biggest key to spearheading this off as quickly as possible. So getting to know your body, getting to know your mind and your thought stream is really important. Taking some time off, an intentional space in which to regroup and reposition yourself so that coping and managing in a healthy manner takes place. A few examples, many people that I talk to that have shared with me, they enjoy physical movement or working out. Some people like listening to calming music or music that they enjoy. A lot of people like the yoga and meditation series. People try to, you know, obviously you cannot eat like crap when you are on go mode. So it's like pre-planning your meals and cooking. People talk about gardening, being around plants and animals, getting out aggression or angst or anxiety through contact sports or exercises. Pickleball is becoming very popular down here. Golf. Yeah. Golf, baseball, softball, tennis, racquetball, punching a punching bag. Another great way, like podcasts like yourselves, is to educate oneself by reading and getting informed to grow in advance, which is great that you have this for your audience and people that are eager to learn more about what they might be experiencing but they can't seem to identify it. So this is a great kind of avenue for people to kind of learn and grow and get informed. And these skills all take dedication, time, effort, and money in those avenues. So it's pretty important to be intentional with it.
It is. I was just going to say, it's kind of like this, cycle we can get into with ourselves. It's almost like a hamster wheel. And I know that, and I have to look out for this with myself. It's like, we know that the exercise helps. We know that making, you know, food for ourselves helps, so we're not going in the drive-thru three times a day. We know that all of these things help, but it's like when you're in burnout, there's no motivation. And it's like, oh, I could just lay in the bed too, which is important, but it's like, I almost have to peel myself off the couch or peel myself out of bed. It's like, okay, we're going to the gym.
Yes.
It's going to feel better.
It's like forcing yourself to do it and not thinking about getting up and doing it, but thinking about how you're going to feel in terms of an outcome.
Totally. Yeah. And I think a positive way to kind of take a look at it, you know, is like, you know, we don't want to beat ourselves up if we're not doing these things, but it's more like, I made a promise to myself that I'm going to do these things for myself so that I feel better. And I'm going to honor that promise to myself. It's a kind of a good way to think about it. There's
something that I think that's really important when we do make promises to ourselves, is we hold ourselves accountable and we follow through the promises that we make to ourselves, because we are kind of like our self relationship with ourselves is probably the most important relationship we're going to have. So not letting yourself down and following through your promises that you make is a biggie.
Yep, 100%. We talk a lot about that on this show. Your relationship with yourself is number one. You got to keep those promises to yourself. So these ones and all the boundaries that we talk about with other people. So, all right. So let's kind of shift gears a little bit. And that was all really helpful stuff. Are there any no-nos or any unhelpful things that you've kind of seen working with this particular population? I know sometimes employers will try to recognize burnout is a thing, you know, that's becoming, you know, more recognizable, and they'll try to provide prevention for it or hang up a sign that says, you know, are you feeling burnt out? But it's not always the most helpful. And, you know, I have friends in the field who even have well-meaning spouses and family, as do I, you know, who just sometimes kind of say the wrong thing. So maybe for loved ones or spouses, what are some things to kind of stay away from when trying to support someone going through burnout and fatigue? And what are some boundaries to kind of be aware of that might need to be put in place?
Yeah, absolutely. I think if you're a loved one in an intimate partner relationship with someone who is a first responder or in the service provider industry, one thing that I would lean more into the positive that's super helpful is to have somebody just listen openly and kind of make it about you. You know, a lot of times when a person's responding to a person, they frame it that it's related to them. And they don't stick with you long enough. So giving and allowing the time and the space and the consideration to encourage you to be open and to talk, and for the intimate partner just to listen and not to judge or correct or fix, but to be an active and passive listener to your loved one. And, you know, it just means like there might not have to be anything to be said, just you could tell nonverbally if someone's listening to you. You can tell, and by their cueing, by their social responses. So it's very important to kind of have the space to kind of talk openly, and, you know, get that unconditional positive regard and space for somebody who is in an intimate partner relationship with someone who's a first responder or service provider.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a great thing, you know, just listening. I know a lot of people just want to kind of jump in and give advice. You know, my partner and I are actually talking a lot about that dynamic in therapy, just from his childhood and his background. And he's also in the medical field. I sometimes when I'm upset and I just want to be listened to, it's like he'll jump in and he'll just want to give me all this advice and just fix it. And we kind of discovered that, you know, he does this because it's really uncomfortable for him to see me that upset. So he feels like he needs to just fix it right now. And it's been, which I think is a common thing. It is.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And so it's been really helpful to kind of learn like, that, you know, that was something that he was going through. He recognized that it's really uncomfortable for me to see you like this, and kind of just work on like getting in the uncomfortable with me and just letting it be.
I think there's something to be said to be comfortable with the uncomfortable. Like there needs to be a little bit of friction and not be uncomfortable with that. And sitting in it, it's okay. Struggling is okay. You know, the goal is to not to have it, you know, weigh you down or knock you down completely, but to rise up from the struggle and be resilient and to start walking again. The knockdown doesn't have to be a stay down. You know what I mean? Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think part of that rise is definitely just kind of giving it a second to be and recognize what's just happened. You know, if you have someone on the job, you know, if you're on the job and someone passed away that day, like you just got to have a day where you can be sad. You can't bounce back from that right away.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Also think that for first responders and service providers industry, one thing that is learned relatively quickly, and it's not really learned in school, but when you're in the working field, is the ability to decompartmentalize what you're seeing and hearing. And so it's less of a chance to bleed into different spheres of your life. I think, That could be a blessing and a curse as a human being, you know, to have the ability to do that. I think some of these settings, you need protective barriers and boundaries, which are necessary along with empathetic responses, as a big proponent of being successful in the helping profession.
Yeah, absolutely. And it takes some time to grow that skill. So especially for the new nurses, new firemen listening, like, yes, it takes time and it's messy at first, and but that is a really important skill. So also covered in the material are strategies and modalities for clinicians who are treating this population. So it's also for those folks. So obviously we can't get too into depth because it's really in-depth thing, but just to kind of cover here today quickly, which modalities do you find as a clinician the most effective and why?
Well, in the book, there are definitely different therapeutic strategies that and interventions that clinicians can take. I myself am a cognitive behavioral therapist. I think cognitive behavioral therapy is very important, which basically dictates how you think, how you're thinking is connected to how you're feeling and then is connected to how you behave. So it's a very connectivity type of modality where our thinking dictates our feelings, which dictates our behavior. And I also think psychodynamic approach and the mind-body connection approach, as well as trauma therapy, because you're dealing with compassion fatigue and people that have vicarious and secondary trauma, are the most useful approaches when you're dealing with somebody in a session or dealing with somebody who has a large amount of stress and burnout and compassion fatigue. So there's absolutely so much power in our thought streams within our minds that directly impacts what we believe and how we feel and how we behave, that it's all interconnected. And what Michelle, my registered intern in the stress management, anxiety management groups are teaching are tools and techniques that heal the mind-body connection through strategies that are proven to decrease and eliminate ongoing stress to prevent burnout and compassion fatigue. So the pulse is there. Many people are experiencing it. And as a group practice, we're trying to do something about it.
That's so great. It's so needed. I love that you guys are focusing on that. And yeah, I mean, CBT is so powerful. Like you said, our thought, I like what you just called it, a thought stream. We're not paying attention to our thought stream. It can definitely run our mood, our anxiety level, all of it. So it's so important to be aware.
Yes. And, you know, the goal is to be aware of it so you're not ending up in a rabbit hole somewhere in a dark place. And, you know, that's the goal, is to have early detection of it is always going to be better for prognosis of treatment, actually.
Yeah, for sure. Well, what's on the horizon for you? Are you working on any other future books or projects? I know we're going to talk about the groups. What else is going on?
So my goal right now is to really focus on helping Michelle with her being a registered intern and helping her prepare for the exam, helping her to accrue hours. Like I said before, we have our pulse on the clients and the community's needs. She's training under me, so I am enjoying teaching and facilitating supervision for our caseload and us seeing and helping as many people we can in our community by providing therapeutic services and doing more. For me, I'd like to do something, some more stuff on a macro level, presentations, public speaking as to educate, as well as doing some consulting work for cities, municipalities, businesses, and organizations, and training first responders and service providers that can indeed negate stress, burnout, and compassion fatigue. So while she's working more on a micro level, I am focusing more, shifting a little bit more from my focus on a macro level.
Yeah, you're going to be so great at that. I could totally
see
you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, for sure. Awesome. Well, we touched on the groups that Michelle is providing. Do you want to just give listeners a little bit of info on how to access these if this is something they're interested in?
Sure. So the best way to find out what's going on in Beck and Associates practice, because it changes a month to month, is to follow us on Facebook, on Instagram, but also sign up for our monthly free newsletter and check out our website. It's www.beckandassociates.com. There's a plethora of resources, videos, and blogs that are super helpful and free that are online that you can start beginning the process of empowering and educating yourself so you can transform to be the best version of yourself. So we offer this on the website. There's a way to contact me. There's a way to business collab with me. There's a way to seek individual therapy in my practice if you're in the state of Florida. I can only do the state of Florida, but I can consult anywhere. So it's just a matter of making the reach out. Anybody who tries to reach me or tries to contact me, that first call, I understand, is the hardest call to make. So I really do work hard on trying to get back to everybody who tries to do the reach out for me. So that's really important, because that call is the hardest call to make. So I really work hard on getting back to people and facilitating some kind of help or resources if I can't do it.
That's awesome. The first call is hard, and it's Yes. I think it's hard when you don't hear from anybody for a long time. So I so appreciate that about you.
Thank you.
Yeah. And then just lastly, we can get the book on Amazon, right?
Yes, you can get the two books on Amazon, Surviving Domestic Abuse and The Compassion Conundrum, if you're going through an abusive, emotionally toxic relationship, or if you're a first responder or service provider dealing with burnout, stress, and compassion fatigue. They're both on Amazon, and they're not expensive at all. The Compassion Conundrum is a manual, and it's on ebook, and it's on paperback.
Wonderful. All right. Well, thank you so much for spending time with us today. It was so nice to talk with you again. Yeah.
Absolutely. And
yeah. I'm sure we will do another episode in the future, but until next time, much love, guys.
Mm-hmm.